And with a little bit of elbow grease, your people don't have to live in a high stress, low happiness environment at the cost of you trying to win. You know, when you let your people in your business live in chaos and disorder, when you allow them to live a high stress, low happiness life in your org, because either by commission or omission, you don't have infrastructure in place, keep in mind that that high stress permeates into the rest of their life when they leave that day, every day. It goes into their family. It goes into their kids. It goes into their personal life, and they bring it with them home. And I think leaders have an obligation to really think about that and consider that you could make life better for people and life better for your business too if you challenge status quo and perhaps do something about it.
You are listening to the Culture Coach Podcast. This is the place where CEOs and people-first leaders come to boost productivity, extinguish burnout, and cultivate a vibrant culture that reflects a fully integrated mission, vision, and core values. Get ready to take your culture to the next level. I am your host, Wendy Brand. Welcome back. I'm Wendy Brand, your host of the Culture Coach Podcast. As you continue to focus on people and profit in your business, I hope you're finding this podcast valuable, really with information and takeaways that you can put into action in your own business each week. That is my goal. So hopefully you're experiencing that. Hopefully this podcast is bringing you value each week. If you're joining again, then it obviously is. Thank you. I hope you keep coming back. Now, in the coming weeks, I'm going to start promoting a new program to help you operationalize your culture. There's several ways to work with me, and if you can't afford or don't want to bring in a consultant to work with your company one-on-one, you may find this content valuable for yourself, for your HR leader, or any leaders that can help you drive and operationalize culture in your organization, whether you're big or small. There will be online materials, an online course, a workbook, and then live sessions each week. It'll be about 8 weeks long. It's going to start toward the end of September, so you'll hear me start to promote it soon. And it's really meant to just kind of be this container where you can learn from peers, learn from me. And the best part is that you walk away with your own customized culture roadmap to operationalize your culture. So keep an eye out for that. But for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to be bringing you two different CEOs, small to medium-sized businesses, so that you can hear firsthand from someone who is going through it just like you. While I have led teams and organizations in the past, these leaders are in it right now. And they are using tools and approaches to culture that I believe are at the root of operationalizing and building that strong foundation for growth and scalability. So, my guest today is no stranger to growth, scalability, or culture. Garrett Delph is founder and CEO of Clarity Ops. He's a serial entrepreneur, an inspiring leader with a remarkable track record. So he has founded three successful businesses, collectively generating over $40 million in revenue. As founder, CEO, and managing operating partner, he's guided leadership teams of over 500 employees. His expertise in empowering leaders, rapid scaling, culture protection, and operational simplification is unparalleled. I have to say, this conversation ranks as one of my top five over the last year and a half of hosting this podcast. So I hope that you also enjoy it. I know you will. Okay, welcome back. Today I have with me Garrett Delph. Garrett, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much, Wendy. It's great to be here.
So glad you're here. And I am so excited to talk to you. It sounds like we have a lot in common, the way that we think about culture. So I'm really excited to dig in and learn more about you and about really your take on this whole thing. And I want to start with, you know, you are a serial entrepreneur. You've had three very successful businesses. I want to hear a little bit about those businesses and then where you are today.
Yeah, sure. Would love to share. And thank you for asking. And by the way, I really am also looking forward to the conversation because I think in this day and age, it's an important one. It really is, you know. So just a quick 50,000 feet. The businesses mentioned first is my business shoot.edit, which is still active, but I have great leadership and they're operating that. That's a digital media post-production social media company. So we edit a lot of photos for professional photographers around the world, make them look pretty, and then publish and distribute them on their behalf. And also we have a marketing engine attached to that. So that's really great.
Cool.
Have another business called BizBox. It's essentially a services-based business that it acts as a back office for other companies that they can scale at the end of the day. And then my new venture, which is about a year old, it's Clarity Ops, which is really the culmination of my journey as an entrepreneur to take tools and frameworks and systems and templates and antidotes to solve all operational infrastructure problems that I believe plague the majority of businesses. And that's its primary goal.
And so what brought you there?
Yeah. Well, I think in part, as my other businesses got to the point where they were doing okay on their own, I really wanted to take a look at what is my next tour of duty, as Reid Hoffman likes to call it. What's my next 10 to 15 year run? And I thought a lot about that. And it boiled down to kind of the things I just mentioned a second ago, mm-hmm. which we call FAST. And that is, I think there is a major plague to most businesses, which is rooted in operational infrastructure. And when I say rooted, I'm really saying is missing. I think today, in today's day and age, we're bloated with strategy. But infrastructure that governs and protects and makes sturdy a business is missing. And my hypothesis is that is why the stats are still very the same. 9 out of 10 businesses fail. And I get it, by the way. Like, there's a lot there. You got product market fit, you got leadership challenges, you have just bad business decision makings, you have finances, et cetera. But I still think that at the root of all of that is infrastructure. And so my goal with Clarity Ops is to bring a revolution. I know that sounds a little earnest, but I really think that I can take a big chunk out of that elephant one bite at a time. And I'm very excited about it.
I think that is great. And where some of the synergy when I was reading about Clarity Ops and the work that you're doing, I believe that not only is not having that infrastructure sound important for business health overall, but also for the culture. Because when you don't have processes in place, that's where there's chaos. People are confused about roles, responsibilities, handoffs from one team to another, the disconnect. And that's part of what can cause burnout, can create, a culture that's unhealthy. So
I kid you not. What you just said gave me chills. I kid you not. Gave me chills. I'm so with you. I am so with you.
Awesome. So I'm curious, you talk a little bit about an unstoppable culture. And so what is that to you? What is an unstoppable culture and how do you get that?
Yeah, well, an unstoppable culture, first of all, is by commission, not omission. It is by design and planned on purpose. And so what does that mean? It means being, I believe, starting with being people first focused. And ultimately, I think an unstoppable culture comes from the top. I really think all great things and bad things are top down, or you have revolution from the bottom up. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have leadership at the top that values people. Great companies, great organizations, profit or nonprofit, they're always built by great people. And to have great people, you have to care about them. And so how do you take care and convert that into governance and infrastructure? And I kind of like to talk about before you talk about a culture that's unstoppable, what is a stoppable culture? You know, what is a broken culture? And I think a broken culture is a place where you have infighting and confusion and frustration and anger and dissatisfaction and dissension, right? These are all symptoms of bad culture. And so to flip the script there, you have to start, in my opinion anyway, with the business at the leadership level being clear about what it wants. What are the goals? Well, I think actually mission, vision. And then from there, what does the business need for a team? So what are the players on the team? And then, and these are, you know, clinically defined. And then you mentioned a second ago, roles and responsibilities. It's a big miss for most businesses. Once you assemble the team and you know where you want to go, what do each of those roles need to be doing to achieve the goals that lead to the vision mission? And then once you define those, you have to give people the opportunity to evaluate that and say, okay, this is what you want from me. I have questions, or I'm not sure, I want to know exactly what you want. From there, I'd say those requirements of the people on the team, those requirements need to be measurable and objective, because without it, you can't manage it. You know, we've heard the old axiom, like, you can't manage what you can't measure.
That's right.
All right. So it needs to lead to the ability to measure the output at every individual. And then, you know, as we pursue making a great unstoppable culture, you have to infuse accountability, because now that everybody's clear, you have to sustain that. And if you don't, then you're back to square one. And then from there, I think other things that make a culture unstoppable is leadership investing in career pathing. Because most people, when we join a company, you know, we want high happiness, low stress, but we also want to grow. Mm-hmm. And so you want to see great people rise up and be greater and add more value and also simultaneously be satisfied. Well, demonstrate through a map how they can get from A to F, you know, how they can rise up and keep going, rather than it just being political or by osmosis, but there's no really understanding. You know, you and I probably have seen time and time again, employees complaining about so-and-so got a promotion over them and nobody understands why. They're right. So for there to be a clear path. And then I think a couple of other things that come to mind are building community, lots of ways to build internal community, and reward and recognition. You know, a high five, a great job, you're amazing, you're awesome, public praise. These things, they go, you know, giving somebody a Starbucks gift card, you know, all these little things by design. And if you add up those list of things I just shared and more, but that's what I believe is the recipe for building an unstoppable culture, and then rinse and repeat. You got to keep doing it. Jeff Weiner is the ex-CEO of LinkedIn. He said, in terms of building great culture, his number one job of him and his leaders is to be chief reminding officers, to constantly being reminding to each other or being, you know, reminding one another about what they value, where they're going, how to get there, and what was measured to get there. Just remind. It's a communication rhythm.
And so, where do you think the core values fit in there, or do you?
Yeah, I think the core values actually sit right underneath mission, vision, because core values are essentially a set of beliefs that you value, which convert into thinking and behavior. Mm-hmm. And so they really do create rails for people to say, oh, we don't value gossip. And we're going to enforce that because it's cancerous. Or, hey, when we measure your performance, it's not about micromanagement, but we value measuring what we do so that we can, as best as we're able, guarantee that we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. That reminds me of that quote from Alice in Wonderland, and I might get it wrong here, but if you don't know where you're going, you won't know when you get there.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about, we actually value accountability and putting, you know, a definition to why we value it. It's not sinister. It's not about control. It's about winning and winning in a way that gives us high happiness and low stress and perpetuity.
Yeah.
So that's where I'd put core values.
Thank you. I ask because everything that you, when you talk about an unstoppable culture, you pretty much hit every element of my Thrive Culture framework.
Oh, no kidding.
So my Thrive Culture framework is the T, it's an acronym. The T tribal values. So those core values integrated into the DNA of the organization. The R is a responsive listening strategy. So having a listening strategy and taking action and communicating when you act. The I is inspiring inclusivity and belonging. Mm. The V is visible career and development paths. And the E is empowering rewards and recognition. So you see, we're really...
Yes. Clearly some beta waves going on here.
Yeah. So it sounds simple, right? So yeah. Why isn't every organization... Why aren't they doing these things?
Ooh, that's a great question. And I think there's a lot of answers. A couple of answers that come to mind for me is, number one, they don't value it. Often we don't do things just because we don't value them.
Right. From
my own experience, I think another one is I didn't know. Like, yeah. I think I was, probably a good 7 years into building my first really great business. And I didn't know, this is horrible. I didn't know, we had, I think at that point, 40 employees. I didn't know there was a thing called core values. Had no idea.
Yeah.
So I went to HubSpot's Inbound in Boston and listened to a keynote from one of the C-suite people at Netflix. And they were going through their core value playbook. And I'm like, what on earth is this? That's freaking amazing.
Yeah.
You know? And I went home and I studied that thing. Like crazy. And that revolutionized my thinking about not only valuing people and valuing the business.
Yeah.
What else? Why don't people do it? I think sometimes they're just inundated with the messy middle. They're
right.
Inundated with disorder and chaos. And you're fighting to survive and make it in business. And so you put your emphasis and focus on driving revenue. And everything else kind of falls to the wayside. So those are three things that come to mind for me.
Yeah, I like that. And I hear that I don't have time to focus on the people part more than I'd like. And I think that's why when we talk about the structure and the processes and the foundational framework, when we're talking about the building the business, it's those pieces I think that resonate with CEOs, with entrepreneurs.
Yes.
And so I've started coming at it from that angle to kind of speak the lingo, and then it will, it resolves some of the chaos for the people side of it. So you mentioned what you call, I think, the trifecta power of people, process, and performance. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. Well, there are three components in a business that I think are really easy to remember, but they are so inextricably tied to one another. They're so interdependent, you know? And so if core values are a promise to the people and to the business to about what the business and the people believe and what we're going to uphold and value, then that automatically gets into how the people should make decisions and ultimately behave on behalf of one another. So there's your people part. Once you have values for the people, and from there, people need instructions. They really do. We people, we need instructions and directions on what to do in our work, which is why a second ago you and I both agreed how critical path job descriptions are, roles and responsibilities are, to have those clinically defined. And once those are defined, they need to culminate into instructions and directions about what to do, how to do it, and how long it should take. That's process, you know? So that just moves downriver into process that brings governance, and it brings order, and it brings managed expectations for all people about where to go and what to do and how long it should take. By the way, what a blessing a business can give to people by giving them this kind of clarity. You know, imagine if you and I worked for a trucking company and they said, hey, I need you to get to San Francisco. But they didn't tell you how to get there. They didn't tell you the most efficient path. They didn't tell you when to get there, right? And they didn't tell you what to avoid on the way. But you just had to figure it out yourself. And every time somebody took this trip to San Francisco on behalf of the company, they also received the same instructions, nothing. Well, the business lost control. And now, depending on who's driving, your mileage will vary. And you'll get everything from hyper frustration to, wow, we barely made it. Right? Conversely, if you have directions and instructions that are documented and transferable, you give a great gift to the drivers because they know exactly how to get there every time. What a great thing. And then, of course, you get all of the business benefits in terms of scale and efficiency and repeatability and sustainability. I think really that was sort of the prelude to performance. You know, when you can control in a good way, this is a good thing, but when you can control through great instructions and great direction how the people are going to operate, then you can control your performance. Then at that point, you can have cycles of continuous improvement and cycles of increased efficiency and cycles of better instructions and better directions. So there's your trifecta. That's your flywheel.
Yeah, I like that.
And that all leads, and because it's connected to mission and vision, it all leads to growth and profit, which is what CEOs and founders and the C-suite want.
Right. I think it even ties back to, correct me if I'm wrong, getting down to measuring at the individual level.
No, it totally is. It is actually measuring in the macro and the micro. And so the micro would be the individual teammates level. So let's say I'm a teammate on the customer success team. And, I'm an agent. And I'm responsible because I have I was given a very clear job description. And within that job description, I have sort of, you know, focus areas and activities. And part of my role is every time I receive an assigned case, it's my responsibility to have an average ticket handling time of 5 minutes max. That's just part of my KPI. A team or a company that values accountability and understands why KPIs are in place, they will measure the performance of each agent with that 5 minute benchmark and measure it. They'll just measure it. And they'll do a cumulative. And if the agent is at 7 minutes, respectfully but objectively, they'll go to Tim and say, hey, Tim, you know, your average case handling time is at 7 minutes. We need to get it down to 5 because of these reasons. How can I help you? How can I support you? What do you think it is you're facing? You know, that is a micro level.
Yes. Yeah.
And there are probably, 3 to 5 other KPIs in that person's business that need to be measured.
Right.
And then, right, you scale that up and you scale that down. You also scale it horizontally across the entire org.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Okay. Yes. Thank you. Thanks for that connection. It's performance at the micro and macro level.
That's right. And can I make a quick comment?
Yes.
If you don't mind.
No.
It just kind of reminds me of like a gasoline engine in a car. And those require spark plugs, right? And it's amazing to me that it only takes one of six or eight spark plugs to go awry or break, and the entire vehicle stops running, you know? And now that is a such a small micro component in the engine, but it harms the whole thing.
Yeah. And, it just happened to my son, actually, up at college. Did. Yeah.
Dang it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
But it so applies to our businesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is these little KPIs that if they don't exist, but they break, they harm the business. You know, one agent usually is not going to harm the business if you're in a, you know, a medium-sized business. But the problem is, what's that old saying? How you do anything is how you do everything.
Yes. I say that all the time. Yes. Right?
If you're not measuring your agents, you're probably not measuring your VPs.
Right.
So probably you have a core value thing where you don't value measuring in the macro and the micro.
Right.
And
yes. Awesome. Thank you for pulling that together for me.
Yes.
So let's talk about culture protection. So
Sure. How
do you create, I mean, let's say you have a thriving culture and you're a scaling organization. How do you continue to protect your culture?
Yeah, that's good. Well, I would go back to the very top and making sure at the very top, they continue to hold the values in place that made the culture thrive in the first place, right? So that has to happen. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the culture will implode and culture debt will rise. So that being said, I think there's some a few tactics you can do to pulse check and make sure that the culture continues to thrive. One, I think, is anonymous surveys. Using a tactic like an ENPS. I think that's a great, great tool. Another tool is open forum. I think just open forum where you have a safe harbor and you're free. The culture has established the freedom to say what you feel and to challenge things perhaps that are broken or not working, or to challenge change because perhaps there might be legacy things happening in the business or the market. So I think that is really powerful. I think skip level meetings is really great, just to create new ways to see things that other managers wouldn't see otherwise. And I mentioned it earlier, but I think, you know, one way to keep reinforcing positivity is looking for wins in places that are typically not recognized and then reward them publicly and demonstrate to the company through these ways that, like, listen, we value you, you know, we value, you know, if you're doing a great job, we value you because we're going to promote you and we're going to pay you more. Duh. Like, it goes without saying. But if we can, as leaders, constantly reinforce rewarding in the thousand little tiny areas that don't show up in performance reviews or don't show up at promotion or don't show up in I got a raise, I think those might even sometimes be more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So those are a few things that come to mind.
That's great. I love it. And you yourself are a CEO of your organization and of two other before that. I'm curious, what has been your most difficult or challenge in keeping a culture, you know, in maintaining or protecting your own culture?
Yeah, it's great. That's a great question. Leadership. I think, you know, going back to Jeff Weiner's story, either A, for me as a CEO, it was either me constantly reminding myself that one of my main roles and responsibilities is to drive culture and to drive with the values that I agreed upon with the rest of the team to uphold. And then reinforce that, reinforce that, reinforce that, reinforce that. I found that to be a, you know, thanks to Jeff, but I found that to be a really, really critical path step to achieving what you mentioned. And sometimes, you know, when you're at the top, it's very heavy and you can very easily become distracted by counterfeit priorities. So one thing I found is to delegate to people that I trust to do it for me in, you know, in certain seasons. Mm-hmm. So anyways, a leadership thing. And then another thing I found to be really valuable is a little play I pulled from the book, The Toyota Way. And I learned about this thing called the Genba. And that it's a Japanese term for what they call the place where value is created. And this is what Toyota does. Every year, they take their C-suite and their board of directors and they send them to the factory floor and they make them work for 2 weeks straight on the factory floor where the value is created. Without those people, the business has nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they go in there and get close to and learn about and come, you know, and build a relationship with those people so that when they go back up on top, it is very at the, it's at the front of their lobe and in their front pocket about what those people need and want, what they value, not what leadership values. And so I see that that is another tactic I've used to keep the culture alive and well. And obviously the part and parcel to that is listening, really honestly listening. Lastly, this is the thing that we've built into all of my company playbooks over the years, and that is a tenet called we co-lead and we co-follow. And that has just been based on my human philosophy that all of us humans are equal. We're all equal. Nobody's better. Nobody's worse. I mean, like, I, you know, there's like, you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we're equal. Just everybody has different roles. And leaning into that, I've been so thankful to continue to realize that sometimes we hire somebody at the, you know, at the bottom of the org chart, but they are so dang smart. Mm-hmm. They're so dang smart. And in many areas run circles around me. And so, you know, enforcing that way of thinking through the business has been also a great way to keep a great culture, in my opinion.
That is amazing. I love every word, and I no offense to previous guests, but this is probably one of my favorite conversations.
Oh, that's so great to hear. It's so fun to talk about, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It is. Well, we just have a few minutes left. Is there anything, you know, before we wrap that you would want to share with the audience that I didn't ask you?
Oh, thanks, Wendy. That's a good question. Yes, I would say to everybody who is listening, especially if you are founder, co-founder, CEO, C-suite, where typically the power to make change lives, challenge the status quo. That would be probably the one thing I would say is, my hypothesis, Wendy, is these days and historically, I think most businesses and most business leaders have bought the lie that chaos is normal and you just got to live with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love it if leaders that listen to your show would challenge that lie, because it's not the case. And with a little bit of elbow grease, your people don't have to live in a high stress, low happiness environment at the cost of you trying to win. You know, as a matter of fact, I would say also really reconsider how much you really care about your people. You know, when you let your people in your business live in chaos and disorder, when you allow them to live a high stress, low happiness life in your org, because either by commission or omission, you don't have infrastructure in place, keep in mind that that high stress permeates into the rest of their life when they leave that day, every day. It goes into their family. It goes into their kids. It goes into their personal life, and they bring it with them home. And I think leaders have an obligation to really think about that and consider that you could make life better for people and life better for your business too if you challenge status quo and perhaps do something about it.
That just gave me chills.
Gary, we both got chills today.
Yes, exactly. This has been a great, great conversation. Thank you so much for being here. How can people find you if they want to
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Well, of course, they can go to clarityops.co and check out our content, check out the site, and go to our contact page if they want to say hi and you know, maybe do a discovery call. Or they can go to my LinkedIn. It's my handle's Garrett Delph, D-E-L-P-H.
And awesome.
You and I, we were on DMs a lot there, so I'm on DMs quite a bit.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay, I'll put that all in the show notes. I really, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being here. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you so much, Wendy. Yeah, likewise. I really appreciate you having me on.
Thanks. What a great conversation. Okay, here are my takeaways. Number one, rooted in operational infrastructure, bloated with strategy, 9 out of 10 businesses fail. Number two, infighting, confusion, frustration, anger, dissatisfaction, dissension, these are symptoms of a broken culture. Number three, core values are a set of beliefs you value that convert into thinking and behavior. Number four, making a culture unstoppable requires leadership, investing in career pathing for individuals, mapping out how they can get from A to B. Number five, the requirements of the team need to be measurable and objective. They need to measure the output at every individual. Then you have to infuse accountability. Number six, sometimes leaders are just inundated with the messy middle. Number seven, protecting the culture requires protecting the values that made it successful in the first place. Number eight, checkpoints you can put in place include anonymous surveys like an ENPS, open forum to challenge and share, and skip level meetings to engage at different levels. Number nine, your people don't have to live in a high stress, low happiness environment at the cost of you having to win. When you let your people live in chaos and in high stress environments in your organization, that high stress permeates into the rest of their life when they leave every day. Such a powerful conversation. And I want to ask you, are you going where the value is in your company? Are you going to the Gemba? Are you listening and are you leading? It's a lot of responsibility, but you knew that when you signed up. Let's change the way we lead. Such a great conversation. So inspirational. Grateful for Garrett for sharing. And if you would like to connect with Garrett, you can find his website, clarityops.co, or connect with him on LinkedIn at Garrett Delph, G-A-R-R-E-T-T-D-E-L-P-H. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.